We took a look at the whole of this book of Psalms last time and saw the variety of expressions in it, as well as a variety of tools by which the psalmists convey meaning. One of the things that I suggested at that time is that there are a variety of different kinds of psalms, or at least there are groupings of psalms which seem to be alike one another. Now, various scholars have suggested different ways in connecting those psalms to one another. They talk about different groupings. My own preference is to talk about eight groupings. And the eight groupings are, as I looked at before with you, individual lament, cries of the individual in times of distress, communal lament, cries of the community in times of distress, hymns of praise, which celebrate God's goodness and character, songs of confidence, which are really declarations of trust in God, particularly during difficult times, royal psalms, which sing in praise of Yahweh and also the true king. He is the true king, but also the other kings, the monarchs, those in the line of David who sit on the throne and rule in Yahweh's stead. Psalms of Zion, which are kind of like national anthems praising the earthly residence of Yahweh. That would be the temple where the Ark of the Covenant is as the throne of God, the mercy seat before which the people would be called to appear. Thank psalms, which are expressions and appreciation of Yahweh's earthly deliverance. And then wisdom or priestly instruction, which are poems containing condensed wisdom or teachings to be passed along by memorization from one generation to the next. Now, for today, we're going to take a look at individual laments. We're going to look at several of the psalms in this type of psalm collection and see how these individual laments give expression to that larger theme, the cries of individuals in times of distress. Notice in this list of these psalms, as I have read the psalms and tried to assess what kind they are or what collections they might fit into, and these things are somewhat arbitrary because we don't have these directly in the psalms themselves, but in this list, notice how many of the psalms are individual laments. I think that expresses something which is resonant to our life experiences. We find ourselves saying, oh, woe is me. We find ourselves saying, why did that happen to me? We find ourselves saying, how am I going to get out of this? We find ourselves in situations of difficulty, and we seek help from others, but also we cry out to God during those times. Let's take a look at several of those. For instance, Psalm 6. Notice that this psalm has a title, for the director of music with stringed instruments. So there are some of those things that relate to how this psalm was originally sung or performed. We have it according to the Shemoneth, which we really don't know what it means, but it may well be a particular popular tune, or it could be a kind of beat or tempo or style like reggae or something like that. This one is declared to be a Psalm of David, and notice that Psalm 6 occurs early in the book of Psalms, which makes sense because most of the songs of David occur early in the Psalter. Now, notice that this psalm is directly related to David's relationship with God. Lord, do not rebuke me in your anger or discipline me in your wrath. Have mercy on me, Lord, for I am faint. Heal me, Lord, for my bones are in agony. You begin to get a picture of a person who's not gotten much sleep, a person who's experiencing great difficulty, a person who feels that he is out of touch with God for some reason, that there's some animosity that's built up between them and he's not entirely certain why. David goes on to express his anguish. My soul is in deep anguish. How long, Lord? How long? Turn, Lord, and deliver me. Save me because of your unfailing love. The psalm continues to express these kinds of ideas. The idea of torture, torment, pain, frustration, lack of sleep, oppression from the outside. But also intermixed with all of this, you see that David is aware that for some reason he himself is not in good terms with God, that he probably has done something wrong, or that the world may itself be out of balance. And that's why he can ask God to make it right, because he believes that in spite of whatever has gone wrong, God is still in control, and God can do something about this, and God promises to do something about this. Notice in verse 9, the Lord has heard my cry for mercy. The Lord accepts my prayer. David is aware after his time of wrestling with faith and in the depths of his difficulty, God is in fact his greatest ally, and God will come to his rescue. He even goes on to say, all my enemies will be overwhelmed with shame and anguish. They will turn back and suddenly be put to shame. These are the ideas of someone who recognizes that God will indeed follow through on promises made, and that these promises of God are the source of our confidence in life. A few things to think about with regard to this psalm. The dedication and instructions, as I mentioned. Notice also, and become increasingly aware of this, the synonymous parallelism that's used throughout. Most of the expressions of poetry in the book of Psalms are, in fact, synonymous parallelism, where the two lines, a bicola, are reflective of one another in terms of meaning using different words. Notice also the interspersion of declarations about suffering and questions to God why this is happening, or why God is silent, or why God is not acting quickly to remedy the situation. So that in the frustrations of life, we can challenge God, because we know that God wishes for things to be good and right and intends to bring them all out into that direction. But at the same time, understanding that this is not a perfect world, and we live in the tension between the already and the not yet. The already of knowing God's promises to us, knowing what salvation is for David and for ancient Israel, it was those times of deliverance. For us, more specifically, understanding what Jesus has done as God's agent become among us as God incarnate. And then also note that the Psalms almost invariably end up with a confidence. God has heard. God will help. Most of the Psalms of Lament very clearly indicate that there's a confidence that God is going to resolve things, even if I can't see it right now. A second example of individual laments is one of my favorites, a very dark two-thirds of a psalm plus a very bright third of a psalm, Psalm 22. Notice again that this is a psalm of David, but when we begin to read it, our first thoughts tend to be Jesus. You know the words, my God, why have you forsaken me? We'll talk more about that in a little bit. But we need for the moment to suspend our understanding that Jesus used these words when he was on the cross and return to ancient Israel in the time of David, trying to imagine what kinds of circumstances might have produced this response from David's own life. David goes on to say, why are you so far from saving me, so far from my cries of anguish? Notice his sense of being alone and helpless, and also spiritually dead or spiritually bereft of any close contact with God. My God, I cry out by day, but you do not answer. By night, but I find no rest. But even now, with two hugely dark statements of David's existence, notice that he immediately jumps to a sense of confidence that God, even though God is silent, is there and will hear. Yet you are enthroned as the Holy One. You can almost see the glory of God in the tabernacle. David lived during the days of the tabernacle, where the glory of God would appear in the holy place, the most holy place, above the Ark of the Covenant as God's portable throne on earth. You are enthroned as the Holy One. You are the one Israel praises. The people would stand around and they would sing praises to God. In you our ancestors put their trust. Moses and others during the days of the wilderness, the time of the judges, others, David's own family and his background, a line of faith they trusted and you delivered them. And he can mark those statements or those times in history where God was their salvation. To you they cried out and were saved. In you they trusted and were not put to shame. He's speaking about the possibility that this God who has not given up the rule of the universe will come to his aid. But look at the next words. I am a worm and not a man, scorned by everyone and despised by the people. All who see me mock me. They hurl insults, shaking their heads. He trusts in the Lord, they say. Let the Lord rescue him. Let him deliver him, since he delights in him. So David is well aware that even though God can and probably will rescue him, right now he doesn't feel like it's happening or going to happen anytime soon. But he does back off again and talk about the trust that he can have. Yet you brought me out of the womb. You made me trust you, even at my mother's breast. From birth I was cast on you. From my mother's womb you have been my God. Notice those wonderful lines of synonymous parallelism. Do not be far from me, he prays, for trouble is near and there's no one to help. Notice some of the images that come next. Again, this is why this psalm became so powerful in Jesus' own reciting of it and thinking about it as he was on the cross. Roaring lions tear their prey. Open their mouths wide against me. I am poured out like water. All of my bones are out of joint. My heart has turned to wax, and it has melted within me. My mouth is dried up like a potsherd, and my tongue sticks to the roof of my mouth. You lay me in the dust of death. Those are words. Something horrible happened to David, something beyond what we mostly will ever have to endure. And yet, we resonate with his feelings, and certainly Jesus resonated with those on the cross. Look at these things. Dogs surround me. Pack of villains encircles me. They pierce my hands and my feet. That sounds like Jesus, doesn't it? But remember, originally this was David's expressions of the things that happened to him. All my bones are on display. The people stare at and gloat over me. They divide my clothes among them. They cast lots for my garment. This could have been when David was with the Philistines and the people were trying to rip him apart and they had no use for him anymore. We don't know when this happened, but certainly these kinds of things happened to David. And then David continues his requests for deliverance, and notice how suddenly it turns at verse 22, where David all of a sudden says, I will declare your name to my people. In the assembly I will praise you. You who fear the Lord, praise him. All you descendants of Jacob, honor him. Revere him, all you descendants of Israel. For he has not despised or scorned the suffering of the afflicted one. He has not hidden his face from him, but has listened to his cry for help. And then the praise just continues to multiply and build, and it is a powerful psalm of praise. Now, here are some reflections on Psalm 22, which I encourage you to read and reread. Jesus obviously knew this psalm and found in it a strong comparison between his circumstances and those of David. David's tormentors used a variety of demeaning words and actions to accomplish their persecutions. What I find particularly interesting, though, is that the first two-thirds of the psalm are very negative, describing in horrible detail the awful things that are happening to David. But the last third suddenly breaks out in a song of deliverance to be shared with God's people at worship. It's almost like David already has deliverance before he writes the psalm, but he wants to reiterate what he went through in order to come to that point where he can share the good news of deliverance. It's an individual lament, but the result needs to be shared with the people. One more example of an individual lament. This is probably the darkest psalm in the entire collection, Psalm 88, a song of Heman the Ezrahite, or Ethan the Ezrahite. Notice the words to Psalm 88, where the person who is writing this is extremely feeling alone and forsaken. But what's particularly striking about it is that the psalm ends by talking to God as the one who has above all rejected him. Notice in verse 13, but I cry to you for help, Lord. In the morning my prayer comes before me. Why, Lord, do you reject me and hide your face from me? the last verse of the psalm, "You have taken from me friend and neighbor, and darkness is my closest friend." There's a sense in this psalm that I'm not even sure you're around. There are hints of confidence, but at the same time, it's very difficult. Couple of notes about this psalm. It's a song, a seer rather than a psalm, sheer, according to the title. And that means that this would have been an unaccompanied song. You can almost hear someone singing it as a solo by himself or maybe before a crowd in a darkened auditorium. It signals that horrible nature of the psalm. I am left alone. No one shares my pain with me. It is, in fact, the darkest psalm in the entire collection. And even, according to Heman, God seems to be the enemy, at least from his limited perspective. There's almost no concluding note of confidence in rescue or salvation. But we've all been there with him, haven't we? Times when we wondered, where is God in all of this? Yet there are notes of hope and praise throughout, and a sense of confidence that even when I can't feel confident, somehow God will remain with me. We have more of that in the New Testament, but there's some of that here already. A few reflections on the individual laments. We live in a world that often thinks of worship, and its songs are mostly praise, worship, delight, all of that. But these laments help us remember that we are needy people too. They give voice to the cries of our hearts, and especially to those that are too often left in the shadows of the lonely. Laments remind us of our dependence upon God, no matter what the circumstances of our lives, and we ought not to ignore these great and powerful and needed psalms as part of the worship of our lives and our understanding of our faith.